time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bassaruth. Professor Benjamin Karp, his new book is The Great New York Fire of 1776, A Lost Story of the American Revolution. 7 years later, October 1783, General Guy Carleton convenes an inquiry, in part to ascertain whether the same, the burning, was accidental or the effect of a design. That is the question before the court. Professor, this is wonderful. At first, I thought, no, it can't be true. You kept referring to the inquiry throughout the earlier part of the book, and I then realized, no, this is a real thing. Very thorough on General Carleton's part. His questioners had four questions initially to ask of the eyewitnesses, of the people who participated. Do you believe it's an accident? Do you believe it was designed? What do you make of the pumps being sabotaged? And at this point, what do you make of the after effects? The question of the combustibles that were found that hadn't been burned. All four questions are put to the witnesses. Is there a summary opinion that speaks to these four questions? There were others were added at the time. And does a summary opinion give more than we can have in these separate questions, Professor?
Yeah, no, there's never any kind of summary opinion. I mean, these records are thorough, but they are also incomplete, I think, because they just kind of gave up on the inquiry once it was clear that that the evacuation was the final evacuation was going to proceed. The British evacuation from New York. That's correct. And what's really odd about these records is that they are not in the British National Archives. They were in the personal papers of the clerk who took down these notes, who brought them in exile to New Brunswick in Canada. And then in 1893, the New Brunswick historian donated these papers to the New York Historical Society, which is where I was able to look at them on Central Park West.
Wow. I mean, the British didn't hold on to their own records?
These particular records, as far as I know, do not appear in the formal British National Archives. It may well be that Carleton just never submitted them to his superiors.
Well, you've discovered something that I'm sure King Charles will be fascinated with. You know, he's quite the scholar of this period, especially from King George's point of view. To not have the record of something this sensational at the time. Let me emphasize again, as a coming across this. I knew that it had happened, but I'd never had any detail about it. This was a major accusation about the untrustworthiness of dealing with George Washington or the Continental Congress in London. Major accusation. There was fierce disagreement in Parliament. And yes, the war was lost because there were no allies. The professor lists what Britain didn't have. It didn't have allies. Had multiple theaters, had generalship that was various. Communication was difficult. However, the war really turned on a political decision in Parliament. And eventually the Parliament turned away from making war on Englishmen, because that's how it was understood at the time. And to not have the inquiry in their own possession, given the decision that Britain made to turn away from the war after committing all that blood and treasure. Well, let us come then to the American side of this. This is wonderful because the professor also includes Washington Irving, yes, but before that, an historian named Joseph Henry and an historian named Alexander Graydon. They were both very disheartened. Why, Professor?
Yeah, Graydon and Henry left memoirs of their service in the American Revolution. They were both officers from Pennsylvania who had experienced mostly the early part of the war, and that then left memoirs later in life where they're expressing their disillusionment about the way they saw the country was going. And I think that colors their memory of the war. Now, John Joseph Henry had they both had sort of seen the fire. Graydon kind of sees it from behind the hill, where, you know, from in upper Manhattan. And Henry saw it from aboard ship. He was a prisoner of war although he was about to be released, from a couple of miles away.
Wasn't he a teenager at the time? He was very young.
He was very young. Yes, he was a teenager. He had joined the army against his father's will. He was part of the Quebec expedition. He gets scurvy, which plagues him for the rest of his life. And he spends the rest of the war basically hanging out in his hometown of Lancaster, reading up on the law. And eventually he becomes a jurist in Pennsylvania. So Henry's a very interesting figure. And he initially thought, when he saw the fire, that the British had set it. But then he sees British sailors going to help fight the fire, etc. And he says, I'm convinced that the Americans did it. And I've read a bunch of history books that say that, no, it was an accident, or that maybe the British had done it. But I don't believe it. I think that America needs to own up to the fact that even though it's a great country, even great countries can do bad deeds. And we ought to be more realistic in how we talk about this fire, which was really the last thing that Henry saw before he left the army. It was really the last thing in the Revolutionary War that he had experienced. After a very eventful and turbulent year that he had spent going to Canada and back.
The story is told again and again. I've not emphasized enough that in the retelling, the story grows. The moral outrage against the British for executions, the moral outrage against the Americans from the British point of view, because the claim is made by British papers, by papers in England, that women and children burned, that this was utterly cruel and irresponsible by George Washington. Now we come to George Washington. As the professor has testified, not testified, you're not a witness, professor, as a professor has helped us understand, Washington left no document saying, I ordered the burning of New York City. However, he's had a lot of protectors. Parson Weems, the first and most influential of the biographies of the hagiography of George Washington, would not have entertained that Washington participated. Did he mention the fire at any point in his correspondence?
I don't remember. Did Washington mention the fire?
Weems.
Weems specifically, I don't remember. But there are many biographers of Washington who mention that Congress forbade Washington from burning New York City, but then don't mention the fire at all, which I find really odd. To at least mention, if you want to exonerate Washington, fine, but at least mention that this fire happened and burned 20% of New York City 6 days after Washington evacuated.
And you were accused of it, General Washington, repeatedly by the British press.
That is not something that's mentioned by American historians except to dismiss it out of hand.
Well, I'm sure the accusation is in Parliament, and I know they kept those notes. Now we go to two subsequent historians, Washington Irving, who was born 1783. So he's born at the Peace of Paris time, when all of this is important for settling property claims. The people who had lost houses were never compensated. And a man named John Pintard, who becomes the first president of the New York Historical Society.
Founders. I don't think he was president.
One of the founders of the New York Historical Society. Do they have a collective opinion, or are they frustrated by the mixed evidence?
No, I mean, they are basically very interested in exonerating George Washington and exonerating the American army and trying to tell a story of New York City going forward that makes New York City look patriotic and supportive of the United States.
And Benjamin Franklin and Robert Morris, they were keen on advancing the accident. Did they leave anything that suggests that they knew otherwise?
No, not in Franklin's or Morris's correspondence, as far as I know.
So what we have here is a complete record of no decision. Is that where we are, Professor? You've spent a great deal of time with this.
Well, what we have is even early American historians who were willing to concede that the fire might have been set on purpose, who really try to say, well, these were just miscreants. They were apolitical. They had nothing to do with Washington's army. And so to try and make this as historically insignificant an event as they can, it was either an accident or just some bad apples setting a fire because they were drunk or something like that. That is the story that Americans have largely told themselves. And eventually, even the British give up on the idea that the Americans had set the fire deliberately. At some point, they're like, well, you know what? Eventually they make peace with the United States. We are important allies of theirs in the 20th century. Many British people admire George Washington for a variety of reasons. And eventually, by the end of the 19th century, it seems clear that the British, too, have given up on the idea of trying to suggest that the Americans had done this deliberately.
Benjamin Karp, professor of history, Brooklyn College, the Great New York Fire of 1776. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.